That's the headlines this hour. Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says putting trust in the West does not work. South Africa slams the decision by the African Union Commission to grant Israel an official observer status. And a Taliban delegation visits China to discuss security and the peace process with Chinese officials. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that the West is untrustworthy and deals blows whenever it gets a chance. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said that domestic programs should not be tied to the West cooperation, as dependence on the West will result in failure. He said that Iran was successful whenever it did something without reliance on the West. The leader underscored that Iran failed to make progress whenever it linked issues to agreements and talks with the West, including the U.S. Ayatollah Khamenei underlined the West will not help, as it's an enemy. He also criticized Washington for failing to keep his promise of lifting anti-Tehran sanctions. The leader said that the U.S. is seeking a pretext to interfere in the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and missile activities, as well as regional issues. Ayatollah Khamenei made the comments when he received outgoing Iranian President Hassan Rouhani and his cabinet ministers. The president-elect of Ibrahim Raisi is to be sworn in on the 5th of August. Political analyst Fuad Azadi says Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei's speech is a signal to the U.S. that the country will not forget the lessons of the past 8 years.
I don't think we had anything new sentences that we had to pay with clues any three times in the past. Trusting the West, not relying on the West for resolving the country's economic problems. Making sure that the West, especially the United States, does not take advantage of these negotiations to advance its foreign policy goals towards Iran are themes that have been used in different speeches in the last 7 or 8 years. And I think the reason Ayatollah Khamenei repeated these sentences was to put this for historical records, that what happened in the last 8 years, and the aim is basically to provide a historical background for the new administration that's going to start in Iran in just a few days. So overall, I think what we are going to see is the lessons of the last 8 years is going to be something that's going to be highlighted both by Ayatollah Khamenei and the new Iranian government as they go forward with these talks. And this is a signal to the United States as well that Iran is not going to forget the lessons of the last 8 years.
The Lebanese Prime Minister designate Najib Mikati says that he is hopeful of forming a new government in the near future.
I gave my proposals. President Aoun approved most of them, and he made some remarks which are acceptable. God willing, we will be able to form a government soon.
Mikati made the remarks following a meeting with President Michel Aoun. On Tuesday, he had held consultations with different parties in a bid to end the country's long-running political crisis. The country has been run by caretaker government since August of last year, when the administration stepped down after a deadly blast in Beirut port. Mikati was tasked with forming a new cabinet after former Premier Saad Hariri failed to muster support despite months of efforts. Political deadlock has further worsened Lebanon's already faltering economy. Israeli forces have violently clashed with Palestinian protesters in the occupied West Bank town of Beita, injuring over 100 of them. According to the Palestinian Red Crescent, Israeli troops opened live fire and used tear gas on people protesting against the killing of a 41-year-old Palestinian man a day before. Witnesses said that Shadi Omar Lotfi Salim was returning home from work when he was gunned down near the entrance of Beita. There were no protests when he was killed by regime soldiers. Tel Aviv claims that the slain man had approached soldiers in a, quote, menacing manner. Rights groups have, for long, condemned Israel for using excessive and brute force against Palestinians. South Africa has fiercely objected to the African Union's decision to grant Israel an official observer status at the Continental Organization. In a strongly worded statement, the South African Foreign Ministry called the move incomprehensible and inexplicable. It said the AU's decision is even more shocking and appalling in a year which saw Israeli bombardments of Palestinians and continued settlements on their land. The African Union handed Israel the observer status on Thursday, citing the regime's help to the continent in its battle against the coronavirus pandemic and terrorism. South Africa says that the AU Commission took the decision unilaterally without consulting its members. South Africa backs the Palestinian cause at international forums since formally establishing diplomatic relations with Palestine in 1995. A Taliban delegation visiting China has assured Beijing that the group will not allow Afghanistan to be used as a base for plotting against another country. A Taliban spokesman said the delegation made it clear to Chinese officials that those concerns were unfounded. The remarks were in reference to a meeting between the Taliban delegation and the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi in the northern city of Tianjin. The spokesman said the two sides discussed the ongoing peace process as well as political, economic, and security issues. Said that China also promised not to interfere in Afghanistan's affairs and rather help to solve problems and bring peace. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said that Beijing has told the Taliban delegation that the U.S. hasty withdrawal from Afghanistan shows the failure of Washington's policies towards the country.
Afghanistan belongs to the Afghan people, and the future and destiny of Afghanistan should be in the hands of the Afghan people. The hasty withdrawal of the United States and NATO troops from Afghanistan actually marks the failure of the United States' policy towards Afghanistan. And the Afghan people have an important opportunity to stabilize and develop their own country.
The spokesman quoted Wang Yi as saying that the Taliban, as a pivotal military and political force, are expected to play an important role in ending Afghanistan's war and rebuilding the country. The visit comes as the group continues a sweeping offensive across Afghanistan, including areas along Chinese borders. Various rounds of peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban have not made substantial progress. Moscow has rejected the latest U.S. allegations of Russian interference ahead of the 2022 American congressional elections. Kremlin spokesman said U.S. President Joe Biden's anti-Russia claims are only aimed at making an impression at home. Biden on Tuesday lashed out at his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, calling him, quote, dangerous. He said that Putin is leading an economy that only has nuclear weapons and oil and nothing else. Biden also warned Russia against alleged cyber attacks, saying that they could spell war. While accusing the Russian president of spreading misinformation, Biden said what Putin is doing amounts to a pure violation of the U.S.'s sovereignty. Russia had already been accused of interfering in the 2016 U.S. election in favor of former President Donald Trump, a charge that Moscow denies. Two American police officers have been arrested following the beating of an unarmed African-American man in the state of Colorado. The footage from the officer's body cam contains graphic content and may be upsetting to some people.
Get on your face now!
Okay, bro!
Get on your face!
Okay, bro!
Okay!
Get on your face!
Get on your face!
Leave me, bro!
On your face! Get on your face! Roll over on your face!
Okay. Get on your face!
In the footage released by the Aurora Police Department, the victim repeatedly cries, "Don't shoot me and help." Male officer is seen pistol whipping and choking the man. The officer is charged with attempted first-degree assault, second-degree assault, oppression, felony, menacing, and first-degree official misconduct. Also, a second officer is accused of failing to intervene and report the use of force by his colleague. Aurora police officials have called the arrest a very despicable act. Cities across the U.S. have been the scene of protests over police brutality and racial profiling against African Americans in recent years. On to Washington, protesters there have rallied outside of the White House calling for an end to the U.S. blockade of Cuba, despite repeated attempts by a large contingent of right-wing Cuban expats to silence them. Wyatt Reed has the details.
The scorching heat wasn't enough to slow down rally organizers, the Cuban-American activists known as Puentes del Amor, or Bridges of Love, and neither was the crowd of angry counter-demonstrators. Bridges of Love marched here all the way from Miami to call on U.S. President Joe Biden to honor his campaign pledge to rescind Trump-era restrictions on Cuba.
The pilgrimage started a month ago in Miami, and And we started a group of people, you know, walking from Miami through several cities, you know, Jacksonville, North Carolina, Virginia. It was a long road, and we met a lot of people along the way that support, you know, our cause, which is, you know, asking President Biden to at least minimum just sign of the sanctions that Trump put in place when it was his time.
Organizers condemned the brutal and indiscriminate economic war the U.S. has waged on the small island nation for 62 years.
I don't care who the president is, we have been the victim for far too long. So I walk with Cubans. I stand with you because since 1492, we know what oppression looks like. So we come together today to say, let Cuba live.
For some Cuban Americans, the idea of making peace with the socialist administration of Manuel Diaz-Canel is a bridge too far. They've shown up by the busload, 18 of them according to the Washington Post, to bully, harass, and intimidate those who oppose the U.S. government's seemingly endless efforts to overthrow Cuba and depose its leaders.
Not all Cubans in the United States want an intervention. Not all Cubans in the United States want a blockade. I don't know if we are majority or minority. I don't care. I know that we are a peace that we want for our people back in Cuba to be happy and to have the right to defend by themselves within their territory. So.
Now, eventually, police erected a barrier between the groups after repeated attempts by right-wing provocateurs to disrupt the rally and intimidate its participants. In the end, activists say the event was a big success. And with President Biden recently promising that the newly announced sanctions are, quote, just the beginning, activists say we can expect to hear quite a bit more in the days to come from those who support peaceful coexistence and an end to the brutal blockade that's behind the shortages plaguing the country. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
Tunisia is experiencing a crisis which has put its young democracy in jeopardy. The crisis was sparked after President Kais Saied suspended parliament and sacked the premier as well as the defense minister. Opponents of Saied say that they are ready for early elections, but at the same time are warning against what they have called an autocratic regime. Well, the situation remains tense amid heavy military deployment to parliament and other government buildings.
Tunisia is facing its worst crisis in a decade after President Kais Saied ousted the government of Prime Minister Hicham Mechichi and suspended parliament with help of the army. Saied has announced that he would assume executive authority with the assistance of a new prime minister. This is seen as the biggest challenge yet to Tunisia's democratic system. Kais Saied has also imposed a nighttime curfew across the country to prevent unrest and violence. Parliament Speaker Rachid Ghannouchi, who heads Ennahda party, has condemned Saied's decision as an assault on Tunisia's democracy.
Today we are surprised by supreme decisions that not only surprise Ennahda, but also surprise the Tunisian people and the world in a country that is proud of being the first Arab democracy and having the latest constitution.
Ennahda has played an important role in successive coalition governments. Ghannouchi has urged his supporters to take to the streets to show their anger at the president's decision. Tunisia has witnessed mass protests in several cities across the country against the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic and the dismal state of the economy.
Well, I guess Tunisia is going through turmoil and many problems. Internal problems and, of course, foreign problems because of the relationship between, for example, Ennahda and Saied with the French and with the Emirates and all these things.
The president has described his actions as constitutional and said Article 80 of the Constitution gave him power to dismiss the government, appoint a temporary administration, freeze parliament, and lift the immunity of its members.
Some have talked yesterday about a coup. I don't know in which law or political sciences school they studied. How can a coup be based on the Constitution? This is an implementation of the constitutional script. Article 80 of the Constitution gave the President of the Republic the right to take the procedures he sees necessary in the face of an imminent danger.
Many believe the main source of the problem in Tunisia is an economic one. The economy there has not been doing well ever since the 2011 revolution. While poverty, inflation, and food insecurity remain high, COVID-19 has worsened the crises, especially with a heavy blow to Tunisia's tourism sector.
Tunisia witnessed a successful revolution back in 2011. Back then, Tunisians ousted the country's former Western-backed ruler, Zine El Abidine Ben Ali, following mass protests. Many believe the revolution failed to deliver prosperity or good governance.
And I guess the issue is very, very deep and profound, because there's a great conflict between these people in the government, who have made a kind of collaboration between the secularists and Al-Nahda movement. Al-Nahda movement, through its relations with the Turks and Bin Said with the Emirates and the French and the NATO, there is a problem.
President Said is reported to have requested critical financial assistance from Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Egypt in order to stave off the crisis. Saudi Arabia and the UAE are seen as opponents of the Muslim Brotherhood. Ennahda, which is an important force in Tunisia's political landscape, is said to have close ties with the Muslim Brotherhood. In recent years, Ennahda has sought to distance itself from the Brotherhood. Regional allies of Ennahda, including Turkey and Qatar, have sharply criticized President Said's moves.
What will do, what will make a possible exit from this crisis is that to go all of them to a new constitution that would distribute the legitimacies and the privileges of the institutions, the constitutional institutions, into a new relationship that depends on the election, on the people, to go to a new referendum about the situation in Tunisia. But I guess the situation in Tunisia is going to really deteriorate and accelerate more in a dangerous manner.
Opponents of President Said have likened him to Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who deposed the Brotherhood's elected former president, Mohamed Morsi, and banned the group in 2013.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Celebrates the divine appointment of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as Prophet Muhammad's vicegerent and successor. We here at Arabi English Radio congratulate all our Muslim listeners on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Qadir.
In the limelight.
Cyprus, Cuba, Turkey, Canada, Northern Ireland, Antarctica all recorded their highest ever temperatures in the last 2 years. And according to a new study, more such extremes are coming. In the next 3 decades, record-shattering heat waves could become 2 to 7 times more frequent in the world, than in the last 30 years, scientists report in a new study published on Monday, 26th of July, in the journal Nature Climate Change. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Reuters journalist Andrea Yanuta. The article has been published by the Reuters news agency and is titled "Record-Smashing Heat Extremes May Become Much More Likely with Climate Change Study." Cyprus, Cuba, Turkey, Canada, Northern Ireland, and Antarctica all recorded their highest ever temperatures in the last 2 years. And according to a new study, more such extremes are coming. In the next 3 decades, record-shattering heat waves could become 2 to 7 times more frequent in the world than in the last 30 years. Scientists report in a new study published on Monday, 26th of July, in the journal Nature Climate Change. Beyond 2050, if current greenhouse gas emission trends continue, such record-breaking heat waves could be 3 to 21 times more frequent, according to the new study. Even with the records seen in 2021, we haven't seen anything close to the most intense heat waves possible under today's climate, let alone the ones we expect to see in the coming decades, said the co-author Erich Fischer, a climate scientist at ETH Zurich, the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. For the study, the researchers used climate modeling to calculate the likelihood of record-breaking heat that lasted at least 7 days and far surpassed earlier records. Communities preparing for climate change need to be preparing for such extremes, he said. Every time record temperatures or precipitation go well beyond what we'll experience during our lifetime, that's usually when we're unprepared and the damage is largest, Erich Fischer said. Last month's Canadian heatwave killed hundreds of people and reached 121 degrees Fahrenheit, that is 49.6 degrees Celsius, an eye-popping 8 degrees Fahrenheit or 4.6 degrees Celsius above the country's previous all-time record, set way back in 1937. We should no longer be surprised if we see records smashed by large margins, Professor Fischer said. If greenhouse gas emissions are aggressively cut, the likelihood of heat waves would remain high, but the chances of exceeding records would eventually fall over time, the study suggests. The new research shows that we must expect extreme event records to be broken, not just by small margins, but quite often by very large margins, climate scientist Rowan Sutton at the University of Reading's National Centre for Atmospheric Science said in a statement. This highlights the huge challenge to improve preparedness, build resilience, and adapt society to conditions that have never previously been experienced, Professor Rowan Sutton said. The study was released as scientists with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, begin 2 weeks of virtual meetings to finalize their next global climate science assessment.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Discovering Islam.
Based on the Islamic teachings, the soul lives after the body is dead and decomposed. Based on the same teachings, the souls will be resurrected in their bodies on the Day of Judgment. However, the question is, where would the soul go in the interim period between death and the Day of Judgment? Would they live, or they will be in a state of oblivion? If they live, what type of life they would have? Do they feel happiness and pleasure and pain and agony? What about those souls who have not lived enough to attain merit or demerit? What about the children? What type of life they would have in that interim period? The world of the dead is usually portrayed as the most terrifying realm man has ever imagined, the realm of spooks. We are usually frightened even to think about it. However, based on the Islamic teachings, what comes after death and before the resurrection of the dead is a fascinating world.
The phases of our existence are divided into two. One is called al-dunya, this world, and one is called al-akhirah, what happens afterwards, the hereafter. Dunya is roughly divided into our existence as we walk about on earth and our existence when we lie under the ground. One is dunya, one is barzakh. Both of them are still dunya. They are not akhirah. So we define dunya as everything that happens before the blowing of the trumpet that brings an end to all this life. And that is divided into earthly life and barzakh.
Okay, that is the dunya and that is the akhirah. Okay, two very distinct. But there is a buffer world, or a world that in a way is brings the two together. You know, it separates the physical world of the laws of physics and the world of spirits, and the two, you know, because of their very different laws and incompatibility, really.
In barzakh, the souls, if you like, are kept in waiting till the rest of humanity catches up with them, so that then they can enter the new phase of their existence, which is to be arrayed in front of their Lord on the Day of Judgment.
With death, we enter a world of wonders. We will have dreamlike experiences, which is far more different from what we now know.
The awareness in barzakh of an individual, believer or unbeliever, is vastly superior to the awareness of even the greatest scholars who are alive now, because there is an element of certainty in the vision that you have in barzakh, which is difficult to get in this world.
This stage of our life, or this stage of journey towards the Lord, is called with different names in Islamic literature. It is sometimes referred to as the middle world, or the world of images, alam al-mithal, or the barrier world, barzakh.
Barzakh is a variety of passages into the hereafter.
Something that separates two things is a barzakh. And that's why this realm is called the barzakh, because it divides this life that we live in right now from the hereafter. Although it's a very, very long time in between, nonetheless, since it divides these two from each other and separates them, it has been called the barzakh, where people go.
We call it barzakh because there is an impregnable barrier between that dimension and the dimension in which we live now. It cannot be penetrated back after the soul has passed through it with the help of the angel of death. Now, the Quran states that after they die, behind them is a barrier until the day they are resurrected.
The Quran states, and beyond them is a barzakh, or a barrier, before the day in which they will be brought forth. So the Quranic picture of barzakh is some sort of intermediary phase before the major day of resurrection.
Barzakh in Arabic just means barrier. Something that separates two things, like we have, for example, in the verse in Surah Rahman, that the sweet water and the salty water have a barzakh between them. And, you know, these waters can travel together without mixing, because there is this impenetrable barrier between them. In the same way, this barzakh, the intermediary world, because it is a buffer, if you like, between life and world, life of this world, and the Day of Judgment. And these are one-way streets. People do not come back from them.
There is a point in the near-death experience that a lot of people mention, in which they have a point of decision, let's say. It could be sometimes a barrier that they are going to pass, or sometimes it's just a perception that if they move on, it's like a decision made, either I come back or I stay. Come back, I mean, to the intraphysical life, their lives back.
When we talk about the world of graves, we do not talk about the physical bodies buried here, rotten after a while. We talk about a world of a different dimension. We talk about the souls living in the spiritual bodies. Although they are connected to our world, but they live in a completely different dimension.
The grave referring to here, of course, is a spiritual grave, not the physical grave. You might have an individual who may not even have a grave. God forbid someone dies in the sea, and let's say maybe eaten up by the animals of the sea. So he or she may not even have a grave. But what we're talking about is the spiritual grave, not the physical grave.
Where is the soul of this body now? Does it really live inside this? According to our knowledge and according to the traditions that we have been taught, the soul is not related to this body anymore. The soul is living in a spiritual body. This body, whether rotten or kept intact, is of no use anymore.
The question that comes up is, why is it necessary to even have a barzakh realm, a barzakh world that we go to after death? Why not go straight to the hereafter? First of all, there's a fixed time for the hereafter. And in the Quran it says, "Ilmuha inda Rabbi," and the knowledge of the hour is with my Lord. So that has a fixed time, and now we're living in this life. And at the same time, we believe that the soul doesn't die. The body will die, will deteriorate. But the soul is to live on. Okay, so where is it going to be? What's going to happen? Because the hereafter hasn't arrived yet. The Day of Judgment hasn't arrived yet. Well, that's where it's going to be then. It's going to be somewhere. That somewhere where the soul is residing is called the barzakh.
What is the purpose of barzakh? My idea is that, of course, the Day of Judgment is a day when there will be a collective presence of humanity. But humankind comes to the earth and leaves the earth in groups. We don't all come together and we don't all leave together. But on the Day of Judgment, we all have to arrive together, which means that we need a holding area.
In this seir and this traveling towards Allah and movement towards Allah, this soul is developing slowly. They say that the barzakh is a place where souls are prepared either for the punishment or for the great rewards. In the barzakh, it is where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will sometimes have people compensate for what they missed in this life so that they don't miss out on the good stuff on that side. Of course, it doesn't mean that we have a chance to do good deeds there. That is done. But still, those good deeds that we did in this life, those good intentions that some might have had in this life, will have an effect on their development in the barzakh.
The traits that we allow our souls to be occupied in, or the dispositions that we form in this world, they become like the seeds germinated within fertile ground. They sprout and they come to the fullness of their existence, just like a baby through the influence of DNA becomes a fully grown baby, a fetus, before they arrive into this world. So before we arrive into the next world, we fully mature in accordance with those dispositions that we have brought upon our own selves within this world.
It's in that dimension which question about the past life of every individual buried takes place. And that is the world of the grave. That is Alamul Mithal.
Mithal means image, but not like the image we see in the mirror. Rather, it's an image not dependent on mass and matter, hence more abundant with life and freshness.
Sorrow and happiness, pain and pleasure, and any other quality that we experience in this world are but faint shadows reflected from that world on the dull face of the matter. A world in which the heaviness of the matter does not slow down the life, just like what we see in our dreams or experience in our imagination.
The pleasure and the pain of that world and the duration of that world can never be likened to this world, because in this world everything is watered down. My fullness of my pleasures cannot come to the fore, nor my pains or my fears, because there are limitations through matter. But in that world there are no limitations.
The spiritual grave could be either a place of garden, heaven, paradise. Someone feels that he or she is receiving the blessings of God Almighty. Or it could be one of the pits of fire where the punishment will constantly endure.
The soul is subjected to confinement, pain, punishment, sickness, and grief, as they are to various states of joy, rest, bliss, and freedom. Now, all these are, of course, experienced in the spiritual body and not by the physical body.
In Barzakh, we would feel pain, sorrow, and happiness, absolutely, because these are aspects that deal with the nafs, and it does not deal with the physical body. Although they say there are some happy hormones in the body, there are some painful hormones in the body, but these would come as consequences, you know. So the soul or the nafs is what feels the pain and the pleasure, and that, since it never dies, it's not the physical body that feels the pain and the pleasure. No, it's reflected on the physical body, but it's actually the soul or the nafs that is feeling it.
The Quran states that the life of this world is just play and sport, and that the real life will come in the hereafter. As the middle world or barzakh is one step ahead towards the hereafter, the life there must be much richer than what is experienced here.
The whole context that we understand this world is different over there. And therefore, it's very difficult for that human being. And same thing with the day of resurrection. Everything we know about that world and this world is going to be completely different as well.
This life is seen in Islam and the Quranic vision of Islam as being purely instrumental. It is a means to something much more. Okay, this life is simply a process through which we can start to fulfill the divine potential which is within us, to live beyond the bounds and limits of this material world.
When the souls arrive in Barzakh, they find themselves in a new form of living in which the intensity of life and its dimensions are exponentially increased. The soul in its mithali body is the swiftest thing in moving, relocating, ascending or descending from one place to another. However, based on the degree of their completion, they can be divided into various categories.
One cannot imagine how exciting the arrival of the soul to that world may be. It's so lush, so astonishing, so glorious, that it leaves the soul to marvel for a long time. It's an experience like the birth of the baby into this world from the womb. Now, the difference, however, is that the baby cannot remember anything from its previous world, whereas the baby's soul is very astute and can feel the difference.
There is a constant progression towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at whatever age we go. The soul is not really bothered with whether it is 20 years old or 200 years old when it leaves the body. It is still very young in the great journey that is yet to come. It is an infant. It's just a case of relativeness. Yeah? Because when you're talking about the Day of Judgment itself being 50,000 years long, and Barzakh, God knows how many hundreds of thousands of years long, 200 years or 2 years old becomes very relative. The soul is still young. It has a lot of maturity and a lot of learning to do still.
By entering into that world, the soul moves one step forward, and its powers to comprehend the realities of existence increase. It is now one stage closer to the final destination, meeting with the Lord.
When the Prophet went to the dead of the Meccans that lay on the battlefield of Badr, he said, "Do you find the promise of God to be true?" The Sahaba said, "Ya Rasulullah, bal amwat." "O Messenger, these are dead people." He said, "No, asma'a minkum wa absar." He said, "No, they hear more than you do, and they see more than you do."
people in Barzakh are of different types, much more diverse than we see in this world. They eat and drink, but not of things of this world, and dwell, but not in places of this world.
Their food and drink and dress, their houses and furniture, their cities and neighborhoods are of diverse and dissimilar kinds. They may be poor or rich, beautiful or ugly, and happy or miserable. They are all based on what they have done in this world.
The Islamic tradition has references to three groups. Group number one, the believers. Again, I stress on the fact, believers, not Muslims. A disbeliever can be a Muslim. The believers who have acted in accordance with their faith, they practice what they preached, those will be enjoying some of the features of heaven in that world. On the other side, the second group, the disbelievers, could be Muslims, are unfortunately suffering from some of the punishments that they will be subjected to in the hereafter, after the Day of Judgment. And there's a third group, who some of the tradition describe as they are neither the first group nor the second group. They are a group of people who maybe they were not subjected to enough knowledge. They will be in a state of as if they were asleep. God will just leave them.
For believers, life in Barzakh is going to be fascinating. They live in vast expanses with bespoken landscapes around mansions and palaces furnished with luxurious furniture in their lounges and rooms.
They are served by innumerable some number of servants with inner and outer beauty with no purpose but to serve their masters. Now bear in mind that none of these are physical objects. They all belong to the spiritual world. A world, an image of which is reflected in our world.
All these are there to strengthen their love and appreciation for the God they are going to meet after this stage of their life. However, we have to be careful not to confuse this exuberant life with what awaits them in the eternal paradise, as the quality of life there is in no way comparable with what they experience here in the Middle World.
We have a basic understanding of what paradise has, the beautiful scenery, the palaces, the service, the gardens. But actually there's more to it. Meeting the Lord, proximity to Allah, seeing Allah with the heart, seeing God with the heart, is a theme that the Quran encourages people to think about.
Here we need to talk about one other type of life in Barzakh. The life of those who have died at a young age and have not developed into good or evil souls.
Compared to the grown-ups, the children who die at a young age have one advantage and one disadvantage. Now, on the positive side, they are sinless and hence open to any concept and wisdom that the angels may teach them. On the negative side, they have not developed concepts, feelings, and thoughts which are prerequisite for ultimate wisdom.
The views about what judgment will be passed on those who have died at a young age differ. Most Christian theologians believe that only those children who are baptized would attain salvation. The majority of Muslim theologians, however, believe that every child who has died at a young age would be saved.
If a child dies before he has the mental maturity to choose between right and wrong, that child will continue to exist because he was born for eternity, but he will not, of course, be subjected to any judgment because he didn't have the mental capacity to choose.
They can only be taught to a restricted degree, and deeper aspects of wisdom cannot be known by them.
These teachings have two aspects. One, to teach them the wisdom and the knowledge that are prerequisites for entering that realm. And two, to cleanse them from the wrong teachings given to them by their parents or their society that is a hindrance for entering the holy realm.
Their purity is very different from the purity of the grown-ups. It is this latter purity and the depth of wisdom corresponding to it which determine the place of every individual in the final abode.
We have people out there who envy those who die at a young age. They say this child, this youth, he died before getting a chance to sin and before getting the chance to become a bad person. He's so lucky. But if you look at it from Allah's perspective, it's not necessarily something good.
Children cannot enter the territory of the righteous immediately after death. They live in a very beautiful interim space under the guidance and training of the angels to prepare them for entering that realm.
It's not an art. It's not something big to evade the punishment of the hereafter. That's not what we're here for. Not going to the hellfire is not something hard. It's easy. Allah's mercy is too great. Allah will forgive with the slightest excuse. What's hard is to gain higher levels of closeness to Him. So this isn't something that we should actually ask for. A person who dies young didn't have the chance to develop. Of course, it doesn't mean that he's going to be in a bad position on that day. But he won't or she won't benefit from all the good stuff either.
One cannot wait to see the wonders we are promised in the world of Barzakh, a world which takes us one step further to our final destination, meeting with the Lord. A world which empowers us to an extent unimaginable for us in this life. However, we have not exhausted all our topics about the fascinations of the world of Barzakh. Join me in the next episode of Discovering Islam to talk about those topics. Until then, peace be with you.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.